最高。
Well, this is Jim Fetzer, where I have a highly unusual program today. One of my guests has joined me, but having difficulty making a video connection, which won't alter the audio. But our primary guest, whom she was instrumental in arranging to appear with me here today, is not yet with us. Mona Montgomery is here, however. Mona, I'm just so delighted that you reached out to me to suggest that Fred Lochter would be a wonderful guest on the show, because I could not agree more. What inspired you to come up with this thought, which I so appreciate? Mona, can you hear me? Wow, we got a challenge here. Because there we go, Mona. Can you hear me? I cannot hear you, Mona. Your mic is there. We go. Speak.
Can you hear me?
I can now. It would be good for you to turn up the volume if you were able, but we're good.
I can, but I'm getting an echo. So just a minute. Are you still there?
Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed, Mona. You cannot see the screen?
I can.
Okay. Go ahead. Tell us a little bit about the background and how you came up with the idea of having Fred join us today. And I'm looking forward to his being here.
Well, I heard you on one of your podcasts, and you kept repeating the number over and over again for Colin, to the point where I thought, I think I have time to write this number down. I did. And had I been in communication with Lucher up to that point, I probably had. There was some dispute between Lucher and John DeNugent that I was investigating. And, oh, I know, Lucher, one of my issues is reverse mortgage nightmare, the nightmare of the reverse mortgages. Where in Lucher's case, for instance, he got a reverse mortgage a few years ago. Since then, his property has doubled in value, but so has the taxes. So here is the person who's trying to worry about his old age, and he's on a Social Security income, and his taxes have doubled. Lucher's taxes are presently $6,500 a year, which is...
Tell us more about the hazards of reverse mortgage. I have thought of doing that myself, but it sounds to me like it may sound better than it actually is.
Well, I did 4 videos on it because I considered it a nightmare. I almost got sucked into it, and just in time, I realized that the nice, articulate, Harvard-accented man who was convincing me what a great idea it was not the one that was going to be doing business with me. And as soon as I was ready to sign, they switched me over to a mean lady that was not going to give me any favors at all. And my duty would have been, and Fred's duty is, yeah, you get the money, but you have to keep up the maintenance of your home. They inspect it every year. You have to pay the taxes, and you have to pay for property insurance. So in the case of somebody who's on Social Security, which is often about $1,200 a month, which is, I guess, about $12,000 a year, or maybe $14,000. Okay, now you're paying out $7,000 or $8,000 a year just to keep the reverse mortgage people from taking your property away from you, and then how are you going to eat? So I was interested in that, and I called up Mr. Lucher. And I said, I am a huge fan of yours. I was sure he was going to hang up because I know he gets a lot of crank calls. And I said, and I'm very familiar with the problems of reverse mortgage, and I want you to know that I really sympathize. So that's how I got started talking to Fred Lucher.
Well, I'm going to send him the link again.
Yes. I'll call him. I can call him on the phone and tell him.
Yeah. He may be just having trouble getting it up, you know, getting onto the screen. Let's see what I can do here.
He knows you're going to, he called me this morning and told me you're going to be sending us links. He's very aware that he's supposed to.
Yes, I think this may be him here. Let me see if I got him. Hello. Yes. The link is not working. I've just sent you another, Fred. Listen, what we can also do, I have Mona here with me, is have you call in to 540, you know, that calling number, 540-352-4452, and we'll get you on that way. Try the link again. If it doesn't, go ahead and call in. Thank you, Fred. So there he is. He's going to be calling in if, in fact, we can't get him on the air visually.
Recording stopped. Recording in progress.
I want to keep our recording going, of course, and I want to do some background here about his topic, which is so sensational, to wit, the official World War II narrative, historical factor, mass illusion. According to the official narrative, 6 million Jews were exterminated in concentration camps, put to death in mass in special gas chambers. The gas they used to kill them, Zyklon B, is a mild form of cyanide. We all have seen all the photographs of Hitler ad nauseum. The Holocaust became a kind of a religion where the main components were extermination gas chambers and the 6 million. The fact is, however, there are a lot of problems with this list, even though it's been promoted by Western media and politicians overwhelmingly, including a torrent of films by Steven Spielberg, Schindler's List, Roberto Benigni, Life is Beautiful, Roman Polanski, The Pianist. We had Claude Lanzmann in 1985, a documentary running for over 9 hours called Shoah. The number of Academy Awards, Oscars, prizes given to this is staggering, staggering. Here you have an image of Auschwitz that is, you know, indelible. We have some of the patches that were worn by prisoners in the concentration camps. But we have a group of historical revisionists who have raised questions and challenged the official narrative, including, for example, Robert Forresson, who did a marvelous report about Ernst Zundel and his two trials in 1985 and 1988, by Nicholas Kohlerstrom, his new book, Breaking the Spell, for which I was honored to write the introduction, and Germar Rudolph, who was studying for a PhD in chemistry. Here you have Nick, who holds degrees from Cambridge and London, who was a member of the Department of Science and Technology at University College London. When, however, he began to speak out, even though he's got enormous credentials, he participated in my conference, Academic Freedom, Are There Limits to Inquiry, where we used JFK, 9/11, and the Holocaust as illustrations. He co-organized the Belgrano Inquiry in 1986, publishing The Unnecessary War, co-edited The Case Against War, author of Terror on the Tube, about the London 7/7 London subway attacks, spoke at the Vancouver 9/11 hearings I organized in 2012, authored and co-authored, led on the brain astrochemistry, the Eureka Effect, Newton's Forgotten Lunar Theory, Galileo's Astrology, Venus, The Path of Beauty. He was selected to compose the entry on Sir Isaac Newton in the an International Encyclopedia of Astronomers, which, of course, was the single most important entry. Robert Forresson has spoken out against Hollywoodism, using the film industry to promote a political agenda, and, of course, has been a major revisionist. Thomas Dalton published Debating the Holocaust. Here we see the short book, The 6 Million Really Die, where our hero, Ernst Zundel, was pilloried for distributing it in Canada and subjected to a trial. Now, in my introduction, I take to task the three primary claims, to wit, that Hitler was attempting to exterminate the Jews and succeeded by putting around 6 million to death, that many were brought about by the use of cyanide gas in chambers for that purpose, and that the chemical agent that brought about those deaths was Zyklon B, to which the victims were subjected. Now, the science of the Holocaust, which Gerhard Rudolph has especially championed, doesn't leave any room for doubt about H2 and H3, since the laws of biochemistry and of material science, laws that cannot be violated and cannot be changed, entail that the bodies of those who are put to death using cyanide turn pink, while the walls of chambers used for that purpose would turn blue. But none of the bodies from those camps has been reported to have been pink. An empirical examination of the gas chambers has determined that, unlike the walls of the delousing chambers, none of them turn blue, which means that H2 and H3 are not simply false, but have been scientifically refuted. Let me add, Mona, that the International Committee of the Red Cross was keeping copious records of all the deaths that occurred in all the camps and from all causes combined, and ascertained that when they recalibrated their number in 1993, 296,083 had died from all causes combined. They were keeping the age, the race, the sex, the ethnicity, the religion, and the cause of death for all the figures. 296,083 had died from all causes combined, none of whom had died from being put to death in a gas chamber. And as we well know, when Zundel was put on trial in the first trial of 1985, it was notable because the prosecution could not produce a single witness who testified they saw anyone put to death in a gas chamber. And well, the second trial of 1980, it was sensational because Fred had gone to Europe to visit the camps and study the facilities there as perhaps a leading expert on gas chambers in the world at the time, and he may yet remain today, and discovered none of them were suitable for the function of a gas chamber. Mitchell, I hope, will let me know if Fred has joined us. Mitchell, do we have Fred with us now? That's not good. Ready for Fred if needed. No audio. Mitchell, you're telling me we still have no audio? Mitchell, can you hear me now? Wow. This sometimes happens, Mona, if we're having a very complicated, you know, a very controversial guest, that we somehow have technical issues we do not normally encounter. So let me see what we can do here. Wait a second. It says my Mitchell, can you hear us now?
Yes, Jim, we got your audio now.
Oh, wow. I'm just stunned. Okay, Fred is calling in. Now, obviously, you haven't heard a word right up until now. Not until now.
Some Mitchell. Earlier, but not recently.
Okay, well, I got Mona here to give us a sketch of how Fred is calling in to join the show. Go ahead, Mona, lay it on us.
Well, I just want to say that the story is that Zundel and Farrison and these other old-timers already established there were no gas chambers. They were German, and they knew from basically their own personal experience that it was not true. That was not true of Lucher. Lucher was an American engineer who was the foremost expert on executions in the country. He knows because his father was a prison guard, and he was running around in the prisons with his father, learning all the techniques of how to kill people humanely and instantaneously and painlessly. That's the trick. When you're faced with the problem of having to kill somebody, you want to make it humane as possible. So that's his life mission. has always been. And that's all he knew. He believed everything about the gas chambers and the extermination camps and all that stuff. But because he was the foremost expert on gas chambers, it was he that Zundel called in to make an analysis of the alleged gas chambers in Germany and Poland, which is Auschwitz, is in Poland. So he took his wife, and they got the all expenses paid to go to Germany, and they went to Germany, and he said, "Where's the gas chamber?" They took him into this big room, which had served as a morgue before, for a time, and that's why it had drainage and things like that in the way it was constructed. Because Auschwitz houses about, I'm going to say between, I forgot, which I think it's around between 100 and 300,000 people. And it had served way back in the First World War as a military installation. And all those barracks that you see, which we are told that the Jews stayed in until they were gassed, they housed soldiers. And a part of what you have to do when you have a facility with 300,000 people in it, you have to have a morgue, because people die. Just like in a hospital, here in our local hospital, we have a crematorium, because you have to get rid of the bodies when they die. So they used this thing. First, they used it as an armory, which means it's a big storage unit for bullets. And then it transformed into a morgue. And when Lucher got there, it was still pretty much a morgue, except that they had built this phony chimney that had no connection to anything, underground or overground. There's no pipes going anywhere. And he said, he was standing there, and he said, "Where is the gas chamber that I'm supposed to analyze?" and Zundel said, "You're standing in it."
Fred has been able to join us, Mona. I'm just delighted. Fred, I'm going to bring you and Mona back next week, and we're going to get this right. I'm astounded by how frequently technical glitches occur when I have a controversial guest, and of all my guests, you may be the most controversial. I'm just so delighted to have you here.
Well, I'm here, I think. I got the second link never came through.
Okay. And,
the first link just opened, but I'm in some kind of a limbo here.
Not a problem, Fred. We have your voice clear as a bell. So Mona was given a little bit of a sketch. I was explaining about the Zundel trials and the whole background, and how during the first trial it was notable because the prosecution could not produce a single witness who could testify to seeing anyone but the death in a gas chamber. And then the second was truly sensational because of your report. Give us a background sketch of how you became involved.
Well, I had been working for a number of years with the various Department of Corrections in the United States for all types of execution procedures, with the exception of firing squad. And the Zundel defense team, primarily under the direction of Robert Forreston, started to look in the United States to find an expert. And they contacted the various prison systems that had gas chambers, and they were recommended to talk to me. So Zundel had Robert Forreston contact me, and he did. And I went to Canada. I met with Zundel, and I told Zundel at the time when I went there, I said, "If I find that these things could have been gas execution chambers, I'm going to state that." Forreston was a little uncomfortable because he wasn't sure whether or not I was an exterminationist or not. And of course, I was at that point an absolute nothing, because I assumed everything was correct. And Zundel was confident that what I was going to find there was going to be morgues and not gas execution chambers. So at any rate, they sent me to Poland, and that's exactly what I found. there were no gas chambers. There was nothing there that could have even remotely operated as a gas chamber. The people that talk about this the people that talk about the gas chambers and want them to be gas chambers don't have any understanding of what the requirements are to gas a person. they keep pointing to the small amount gas required to kill bugs, lice, and what have you. But that's not what we that's not what we deal with. They take a long time to kill the bugs, to kill lice or whatever they're killing. We have to kill somebody in a short time period, something in the vicinity of 7 to 10 minutes. So that means we have to use a much stronger preparation of gas, which is what we do. But at any rate, I did go to Poland. I did examine the facilities, and I came back, and a determination was made that I made the determination that there were absolutely no gas chambers. I wrote the report, and unfortunately, I have a copy of the report here. I was going to put it in front of the camera, but that didn't work. So,
well, go ahead and give us just lay out as much as you like, Fred. We're so grateful to have this opportunity to speak with you. I interviewed Ert Zundel years ago. His wife thought it was the best interview he'd ever given. I'm sorry to say, ours has been a bit technically botched, but we'll see if we can't get it right next week.
Right. Okay. As I say, I got things happening on my screen here. I just don't know what they are. It says Zoom review preview not working, but
you can just drop. Anyway. You can just drop that. Just so long as you stay on the phone, we're good.
Right. At any rate, Ernst and I had a very good rapport, and Ernst told me at one point what his name meant, and he was very excited because of what my name meant, both being German names. Zundel means match, or something. It could be a cigarette lighter. It's something that ignites a fire.
Very good.
Yes, and my name is Leuchter, which means a light or a candle or something that provides light that was lit. And he was very happy with the fact, and he spoke about the fact that that Ernst Zundel ignited the Leuchter. And yes.
Fred, I love this. I love this. Let me just add, by the way, Fetzer means in German shredding machine.
Well,
which appears to be my role intellectually, you know, to take apart arguments and diverse points of view. It appears there's a long genetic heritage behind me that may have yielded a present embodiment. But I think that's sensational. Ernst was just such a charismatic guy. He was so inspiring as a speaker. And I think it's just wonderful that the two of you came into coordination in effort here to expose the truth about what may be the greatest hoax ever perpetrated on the mind of man. I think it even exceeds in its political significance the moon landing hoax, which I've dealt with extensively. Now today, of course, we're dealing with something even more pernicious with a coronavirus pandemic, which is all orchestrated. They took 38 million cases of the flu 1 year and then reclassified them as cases of coronavirus to promote. You can kill the break if you can. Otherwise, we're stuck with the break, and we'll be right back.
Okay, I'm trying to kill it, Jim. It's slow.
I think I'm here.
Yeah, we'll be right back.
Listen to Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. We'll be right back after this message.
Recording in progress.
Fred,
Lana Fitch would like to take a moment to thank the listeners and hosts for all their support that has made Revolution Radio one of the biggest platforms for free speech in an ever-growing dark world. Unfortunately, this platform for free speech has never been free. We need the support of the people. It is the people like you, yes, you, that keeps the station in the front lines of the battle against tyranny and oppression. Please help support Revolution Radio so free speech will not be silenced in a world that seems to be going deaf to the real truth. With your support, we will be able to become an even bigger pillar of light in a dark world.
Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported radio station on the planet. Revolution Radio.
Be about 4 minutes, and we're still okay. We're still live.
Okay, so we can talk to each other then.
Actually, not. I don't. Mitchell, did you cancel?
Yeah, we're ready.
All right,
we're ready.
Well, I've got Fred now on the video with me here today. I'm just delighted. Fred, go ahead, lay it on us.
Well, as I say, I'm glad to be here. It took a tough enough time to get in here. I'll say that. And hello, Mona.
Hi.
I have one question. Why is my picture over on the left with my son's name? Ah, it just changed.
Yes.
One line. Okay. All right. That works. Now, I think we're all set.
Fred, I was just, delighted how you and Ernst hit it off. That was very, very good. And I believe Robert Forreson may have been the mind behind the idea of bringing in an expert on gas chambers to verify the claims that are supposed to support the myth, where my understanding is they did use Zyklon B to kill body lice because they were spreading typhus and dysentery in the camps. And they wanted to maintain the health of the inmates because you can't get work out of a corpse.
That's exactly right. They couldn't afford to kill these people because they needed them for slave labor, which is what they used them for. And I think history is going to show that probably the most important person in revisionism was Robert Forreson, because he got this thing kicked off. Nobody up to that time had done anything. And with his show me a picture or draw me a picture of a gas chamber. And he got it kicked off. And he got it started. And he was absolutely right. They needed an expert. And they got an expert.
Well, you have a true place in history, my friend, for which I salute you. It's the enemies of truth, of course, wish only you had never been around, that you'd never gone to Auschwitz or any of the other camps, that you'd never produce your report, that you'd never run into Ernst Sundell, because you have made a tremendous difference by giving an objective scientific analysis of what the camps actually were for, what they could and could not have done. And in this case, the negative that they could not possibly have served as centers for the extermination of even one person, much less millions, is just devastating to the official narrative.
Yes. And the interesting thing here is they could have done a better job when they created the initial myth if they knew something about gassing. But unfortunately for them, they didn't. And everything they did was pure foolishness. And, you know, they do not understand what the requirements are. They think if you can kill a couple of lice in a delousing chamber, you can kill people, and it doesn't work that way. We have to kill people in a reasonable period of time, which, as I say, is 7 to 10 minutes. That's essentially, we're strangling the people with the gas, because the hydrogen, the cyanide, forms a permanent bond with the hemoglobin in the blood, and it never allows the blood to pick up oxygen again. So the person actually strangles or suffocates from the inside out. It's a terrible way to go.
Yes. Are anesthetics used in order to, you know, when you, if someone is euthanized, putting it most charitably, I mean, these are executions, so that there is less physical pain associated? Are gas chambers being used today, Fred, number one? And number two, are they a preferable means for execution when capital punishment is being administered?
It's no longer, gas chambers are no longer being used because the court has ruled that they're inhumane.
Cruel and unusual punishment.
Yeah, cruel and unusual. The prisons, I'm sure, still have them, but they're not using them. They're using other means. We should be fairly well along using police projection at this point, but everything went to pot. When the Jews came after me, because the prison systems were constrained from even talking with me, because several states, the legislatures threatened to pass legislation to prohibit them from talking or discussing any of their problems with me. The other problem that they're faced with is that the European Union has refused to sell the sodium pentothal, which is an anesthetic, which is the first chemical used in lethal injection. There are three chemicals. The first one is an anesthetic, sodium pentothal. The second one is a respiratory paralytic called pentronium bromide. It's a synthetic corollary. It's the same as the natives use in South America in their blowguns. And then the third chemical used is potassium chloride, because heart death has to be, in law, the only death is heart death. There's no brain death or anything else. And the potassium chloride depolarizes the natural pacemaker in the heart. And it actually gives the person a heart attack.
And really? A heart attack?
Yeah, but what we've done is we put them to sleep, then we paralyze his lungs, and then we give him a heart attack. And if it's done properly, and each at a minute separation, it should technically not be, it should be humane. There shouldn't be any problem. Now, I found over the time that I've worked in capital punishment that no matter what procedure we use, about 20% of the time, I can't guarantee that there's going to be a humane execution. There's some variation in the human body that doesn't allow it to happen. And even though it doesn't look like a problem, the person might have experienced some difficulty in pain. This I don't know. And that's the reason why I've taken the stand now that I do not believe we should be doing capital punishment, because we can't do it right in all cases. We shouldn't be doing it. But getting back to the lethal injection, the states, as usual, don't know what they're doing. And they don't come and talk to me anymore. So what they're doing, instead of using an anesthetic, they're getting a tranquilizer, midazolam or something else. They crush it up and mix it in water and they inject it, and it doesn't do the job. A tranquilizer, it does just that. It doesn't put you to sleep unless you eat a ton of it. What the tranquilizer does, it takes the edge off your nerves. It makes you a little more comfortable. I use tranquilizers in lethal injection, and I give them to them before the injection to take the edge off, make it more comfortable for them. But they're skipping a step here. They don't have any anesthetic. Now, if they don't listen to me, and I've talked to several of the lawyers that represent people, I said, look, let's use a propofol. It was good enough. It killed Michael Jackson. So it certainly is a good anesthetic. I've looked at the specifications for it, and it actually is better than sodium pentothal as an anesthetic. And we're leaving injection. But they're not using that. They're grinding up tranquilizers, and they're not putting people properly to sleep. They're giving people, they're causing respiratory problems because the people cough and choke because they're using improper chemicals. In some cases, there's no question they've actually tortured people, but they really didn't get them. So the bottom line is that if they're not going to do it, they shouldn't. If they're not going to do it right, they shouldn't do it.
And what, just to return to the point you've made earlier and reread here, that you're not allowed to have technical scientific discussions about execution because you're politically a pariah. Is that it, for having participated in the Zundel trials, that you are taboo? You're excluded. You're blacklisted, even though your technical scientific competence may be unmatched by any other expert in this field. Do I have that right?
Yes, that's correct. Warden Armantrout, Bill Armantrout, who is the warden of the Missouri Department of Correction, he was state penitentiary. He was the one that primarily recommended me to the jungle team. He went to Canada and he actually testified. And because he testified, the Jews came after him. They spoke with the government and they tried to get him fired. So now the Department of Correction. And when he met with the governor, and he said to the governor, we're supposed to work with other jurisdictions. I went to Canada to testify about how dangerous and how difficult this gas is that we use. They had a 30-foot stack on top of the death house in Missouri, and they still didn't use it when the wind was blowing toward the center of the city, because they were afraid that it was going to blow and then settle down. So they came after him as well. But to show you how bad they are, I had made a lethal injection machine for the state of Illinois, and it was installed, and they weren't using it. The roof in the building leaked. The water came down and did caused a lot of major damage to the lethal injection machine. Well, they were going to use it again, so I went out. I cleaned up the mechanical portion, but the electrical portion I couldn't fix in the field. I had to take it back and I had to replace most of the electrical components, the relays, the timers, etc. They said, you go back to your lab, we'll ship this to you tomorrow, which was fine. I got a call the following day, we can't ship it. A Jewish legislator in Illinois filed legislation prohibiting them from getting the machine repaired. They weren't allowed to talk with or to give me any business anymore. So here they were with the machine that didn't work. And we got the problem squared away, because when I train people to work with the lethal injection machine, as I do with the electric chair and whatever procedure they're using, I train the people on how to fix the machine. I train them on what's happened with the machine, the medical aspects as well as the mechanical. The engineer in the state of Missouri, because I had a good relationship with them, with Bill Armitage, the chief engineer for the state penitentiary, went out to Illinois and he repaired the machine. I supplied $800 worth of parts to the state of Illinois at no charge, so they would have a working machine and they wouldn't torture people with that. And I worked with the engineer from Missouri on the telephone while he made all the repairs. So the Jewish legislators that were causing the problem didn't even know it was getting repaired by me, but I was using someone else to actually do the work. So that's how bad they are. Other states have done the same thing. A Jewish attorney general in Alabama sent out a sheet to all of the Department of Corrections and all of the police departments in the United States, telling them not to deal with me because I was a con artist. I go into the state and say, if you don't buy an execution machine off me, whether it be lethal injection, electric chair, gallows, or a gas chamber, I will go to court for the next guy to be executed, and I'll work with his lawyer to stop the executions. Of course, that never happened. For not a piece of execution hardware was functional when I was hired by the state. And the most notable one where that was with Jesse DeFaro in Florida. They set his head on fire. And the state of Florida hired me to read the autopsy found out what went on and explained to the judge in court what was wrong at the execution, and the judge stopped executions for 5 months. But the state of Florida didn't want anybody interfering because they're a bunch of good old boys down there, and they do the things the way they want to do them. And they could have purchased new Lego electrodes and a helmet. They could have purchased for $800 was the cost of a helmet, $1,200 was the cost of two Lego electrodes that would be mounted on the floor in front of the chair. But instead, they decided they would spend $150,000 running a new wire in from the powerhouse under the wall of the prison into the prison and rewire the chair. So they spent $150,000 when they could have spent a couple of thousand dollars. And they managed to get rid of the judge that sat on the original hearing, and the new judge was an 82-year-old good old boy that authorized them to go ahead and do more executions. And when they did the more executions, they had trouble with the further ones because the electrocution system in Florida was built by a gentleman who comes from Arkansas. He died now. His name was Lee Whitehead. And he was probably the only other person in the country that understood electrocution like I do. But he had a problem. He believed that execution should hurt. So he deliberately used voltages that were too low. And when they executed Jesse DeFaro, they had a cold solder joint in the head electrode. And because the voltage was too low to start with, it was 500 volts, the voltage dropped probably to something around 80 or 90 volts, and then it slowly went up. So I'm sure it hurt. I think they boiled his blood before they finally killed him. The electrode melted, and there was a burn on the top of his head, there was a burn on the side of his head, and there was a burn all the way down at 45 degrees. And this obviously shows that the electrode came apart and melted. But the state of Florida decided that they could get out of it by saying they had a sponge problem. They put artificial sponge on the electrode to make the connection, and then you wet that with salt water. And they said that that's where they did the famous toaster test. They took a wet natural sponge, you put it in the toaster, and it didn't burn. But then they took a dry artificial sponge and put it in the toaster, and it set it on fire. And that was the famous toaster test. The whole country was laughing at them. And Stephen King and his Green Mile, he even bought it. And the reason that the execution failed in Green Mile was for an incorrect reason. But at any rate, they didn't buy a new head electrode. I told them they needed a helmet. They didn't do that. They should have bought two Lego electrodes. They didn't do that. So as a result, they were still using the same thing. And the next execution they did, they had a problem with that as well. The gentleman bled from the eyes, nose, and mouth, and I'm sure he was in pain as well.
Well, this is all very, very disturbing, Fred. I mean, it sounds to me as though you have some sadistic executioners who want to inflict maximal pain on those who are condemned to die. I take it you could rank various methods of killing or putting to death in terms of their humanity. I mean, we have hanging as a classic. We have firing squads as a classic. We have lethal injections. We have electrocutions. We have gas chambers. We have guillotines. My surmise would be of all those, the most humane is actually the guillotine. Would I be wrong? I mean, instantaneous death by separating the head from the body?
Instantaneous. The head lives and is conscious for 7 to 10 minutes after it's separated from the body.
Really? Oh, my really? God.
There's a doctor watch one of the executions around 1906, and when he did, he recorded what was happening, and the executioner was actually being sworn at by the person who had his head chopped off. They could read his lips. He had no breath support, so you couldn't hear him. But Yes, that's a terrible way to do things.
Oh, my God, I had no idea. I thought death was instantaneous.
But the Jews don't care what happens to the inmates. They don't care if people get tortured. The only thing they care about is that they silence me. Now, I put an entire electrocution system in the state of Tennessee. The Jews brought Lee Weickert in, and he modified it. He reduced the voltage to 500 volts. He changed the times. So as a result, they used it three times. I asked the governor of the state, there were three different governors, I asked them not to use it. They totally ignored me, and they did use it. And the only reason I think it worked was because I don't know if it hurt, but they didn't have any major problems that were obvious because they had top-notch electrodes. I used three electrodes, a head electrode and two leg electrodes. All of the other systems that we used only had one leg electrode, so they only electrocuted half the body. And even when you do everything right, in Massachusetts they had a case in the late 20s where they executed somebody. The doctor pronounced him dead. After the execution, they all went down to the guard room in the prison, and they were having coffee and sandwiches, and they got a call. The man's heart started beating again. They had to go back, and they had to put him in the chair, and they had to re-electrocute him.
Oh, God.
What happens is, and that's the problem with Lee Weickert's equipment, it doesn't stay on long enough. You need to deliver two jolts at 2,640 volts. And when you do this, they have to be on for a full minute. It drives the chemicals out of the glands in the body that restart the heart and keep the body alive. The human body does not want to die, and it's got built-in mechanisms to stop this. Acetylcholine, sympathin, and adrenaline. These three chemicals are released into the bloodstream to restart the heart. That's what happened to the gentleman in Massachusetts. The problem is, if you only want to give somebody a 10-second or 20-second jolt, and the voltage is too low, it doesn't happen. You've got to have at least 1,500 volts to seize the pacemaker in the heart. So one of these days, my system may fail in Tennessee. And the thing that I'm upset about is I've worked all my life for humane execution. All that equipment in Tennessee has my name on it. So when it fails, they're going to say, Fred Lucha didn't know what he was doing. He tortured this guy to death. And it's not my system anymore. It's now Weickert's system. He modified the power supply.
This is just terrible, even horrifying. I want to bring Mona in for some of her observations about you, Fred, and everything you're telling us, sharing with us today. Mona, your thoughts.
Well, I just think Fred is the most amazing speaker. He has so much information and he expresses it so well. I told him, second to him, Jim, I think you're the most amazing speaker, but I think Fred's a little bit of you. Other than that, we don't have any real bright people anymore. And I wanted to say that Fred, being the genius that he is, this is a real loss to the world when the Jews focus on somebody like he, as he says, he's unparalleled in his field. He's the only expert we have in executions that has the capability not only of constructing the equipment, but also training the people who are using the equipment, and they're not allowing him to do either of those things. Furthermore, Fred tells me that the doctors don't want to have anything to do with executions and refuse to do them. So that puts the executions into the hands of prison guards and electricians who are, you know, compared to Fred, they're morons and they're not trained. So that to me is the big problem that we're looking at, that the world is being deprived of genius because all the geniuses know there were no gas chambers. And so the Jews aren't going to let our genius class help our society.
What? And it's so appalling that you got the guy who's the foremost expert in his field who's being blackballed because of his political views are being incompatible. Not that they're false. They're provably true. But when you have political views that are at variance with a dominant ideology, even though he's right and they're wrong, they have the power to control the outcome and whether or not he will be given a platform or not. And we see it again and again. The Democrats are very much following in the same tradition of censorship and isolation and criticism. This January 6th thing, for example, is just absurd. They're promoting a whole lot of propaganda. You got an unending public relations operation from now until the midterm. And virtually everything they're reporting is false. I mean, it's just embarrassingly bad. Fred, it's just an atrocity, an intellectual atrocity that someone with the resources you represent would not be allowed to benefit mankind by virtue of your knowledge and expertise on political grounds. That is atrocious.
It's unfortunate because the doctors will not participate. They're not the same doctors we had in 1900. In 1900, the doctors worked to develop an electric chair that would work. They didn't know what they were doing, and they were breaking ground, but they actually participated. But now, since the doctors will not participate, one of the major problems is that almost all the people being executed are former drug abusers. They have collapsed vascular systems. It's awful hard to get a needle, if the proper term is catheter, into the vein. But what happens is many times they have to do an IV cut down. It's a minor operation. They have to go into the carotid artery in the neck or an artery in the groin. They have to pull the out. They have to make an incision, pull the artery out, and then put the catheter into the artery. This should be done by a doctor. I'm not even qualified to do that. And I wouldn't do that if I was supervising an execution. I'd say, get a medical technician here to do that job. But the problem is they don't. And you know who is doing the job? A guard with a 10th grade education with a jackknife.
Ah, my yeah. God.
I mean, if people knew what was going on in death row, it would be unbelievable. Florida, after the Furman decision, when they reinstituted capital punishment, the first person they executed was a gentleman named Spankulak. And Mr. Spankulak had a difference of opinion. He didn't want to go to the electric chair. And he gave the guards a hard time when they went to his cell to get him. At any rate, what happened to him is questionable. But all we know is that even though the law requires that the person be cognizant when he's executed, Spankulak was strapped into the chair. Then they opened the curtain. He was probably beaten to death. His neck was probably broken. But the warden picked up his arm and waved it to him. He says, "See, folks, he understands. It's the juice."
How insulting. I mean, this is so bad, Fred. We're coming up to the big break. I'm so delighted to have you both here, Mona Montgomery and Fred Lucer, who really has made an historic contribution to understanding the history of the world. It's very rare we have someone who's played such a decisive role, a really pivotal role, and yet, of course, it's all being suppressed. Fred, all your good work is being buried by the mainstream media and the news networks because of political concern and domination by the Rothschild banking empire. I mean, it's embarrassingly bad, and I'm just so grateful to have the opportunity to have you here. I'm very keen on your views about capital punishment when we return from the break, and whether you think it's ever justified, and what would be the right way to go about it if states were to follow your lead and ignore the lesser authorities that they're using, including a fellow with a 10th grade education and a jackknife. We'll be right back with Mona Montgomery and Fred Lucer. Stand by.
Radio at freedomslips.com. We'll be right back after this message.
Was it a conspiracy? Did you know that the police in Boston were broadcasting, "This is a drill, this is a drill," on bullhorns during the marathon? That the Boston Globe was tweeting that a demonstration bomb would be set off during the marathon for the benefit of bomb squad activities. And that one would be set off in 1 minute in front of a library, which happened as the Globe had announced. Peering through the smoke, you could see bodies with missing arms and legs. But there was no blood. The blood only showed up later and came out of a tube. They used amputee actors and a studio-quality smoke machine. Don't let yourself be played. Check out And Nobody Died in Boston Either. Available at moonrockbooks.com. That's moonrockbooks.com.
If you think for 1 second that the Capitol will ever treat us fairly, you are lying to yourselves. Because we know who they are and what they do. This is what they do, and we must fight back. You can torture us and bomb us. Fire is catching. And if we burn, you burn with us.
Good evening.
Are you awake yet? I hope. We've tried and we've tried for years and years to use passive resistance and loud voices to make a change. That time is over. Your governments around the world have no other goal than to decimate your entire existence at the hands of the bankers and the elites. The war is coming, and it's your choice to decide if you want to be a warrior or a victim. Denial is not a choice anymore. Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, the number one listener supported radio station on the planet, not giving up. Revolution Radio.
Amazon banned my book so you wouldn't learn what really happened at Sandy Hook. It was a FEMA drill presented as mass murder to promote gun control. Then they sued to shut me up, and the Wisconsin courts played along. I have the proof and the law on my side. What I don't have is the money. They want to do to us what they've already done to Canada. Take guns, impose tyranny. It's on the way with Remington's help. First insurance, then registration, then confiscation. I'm asking SCOTUS to stop it. GiveSendGo.com, funding Fetzer. Check it out. This is for all the marbles.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates. You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
Well, it's just a delight to have such an historic guest on the show today. And I'm grateful to Mona for suggesting bringing Fred in. And I was so glad to learn he was not among the dear departed. So many of our friends, especially in the wake of the vax, are no longer here to enjoy their company. Fred, I wanted to ask about your thoughts about capital punishment. You seem to me to be in a unique position to address the issue. And you know, I'm interested both philosophically and technically, if it were to be implemented, how it ought to be done, but whether you think it's even a good idea in general, does it have any benefit? There are, in general, four motives affecting punishment. One is to remove a threat. You get the threat out of society. Another is to set an example. By punishing someone, you discourage repetitions of that conduct. But there's also the motive of just retribution, you know, somehow compensating in that way. Your thoughts, go ahead. Just open the field here.
Well, I've never taken a position where I would interfere or criticize a sovereign state as to whether or not they should have capital punishment. That's up to the voters in the state. I do make suggestions, and the suggestion that I make is that after being involved in executions and capital punishment for more than 40 years, I don't think we can do it right every time for reasons beyond our control. The physiological differences in the bodies of the individuals who are executed. I do know this, that when I first started working with capital punishment after Furman, I do know that there was a study done in, I believe it was the late 50s. It was done at one of the universities that showed that there was some deterrent capability with executions. What they did is they monitored executions and violent crime, and immediately after a sentencing, there was a smaller drop in violent crime. When the more publicity the thing got, there was another drop in violent crime. And then after the execution, there was a major drop in violent crime in that immediate area. So there does seem to be some correlation between capital punishment as a deterrent and violent crime. However, there hasn't been enough of a study done, and the people that oppose capital punishment say, well, it's a deterrent. The people that are against it say it isn't a deterrent. The only thing I know that there is a small amount of information that indicates that there may be some deterrent value. But the problem I have is that if we cannot do it right every time, If 20% of the time it gets away from us for one reason or another, do we have the right to do it? Or does this put us in the same position that the person we're executing was in, where he's causing harm and doing something that he shouldn't be doing to a fellow human being, knowingly? And I believe that we, at least I know, that we can't do it right every time. And that being the case, I recommend that we no longer do it. But of course, there are those people that say, it doesn't matter, it's supposed to hurt. So what's the difference? We have Lee Weickert all over the country. Because unfortunately, Lee Weickert was an engineer, so he knew how to make it to hurt. You know, I had an interesting situation. The CIA referred the secret police in Turkey to me to make an interrogation device. And they wanted me to make an interrogation device that didn't injure the human body. Normally when they interrogate people, they beat them. And you may put a bar of soap in a sock and hit them with it, but I mean, nevertheless, it still does some damage. What they wanted is, and they often use it, this procedure, they have electrodes that made for use anally, vaginally, and also on a man's penis. And that inflicts a lot of pain in a very short time. They wanted me to make a device that did this with biofeedback. so that I could hold the person just at the point of passing out, but not letting him pass out, over a time period of 3 or 4 or 5 days. And I mean, this to me is terrible. Just the thought of it.
This is a torture device they're asking you. This is a CIA nightmare, you know, I mean, or wet dream, depending on how you view it.
Right. But what they were saying is that we don't need to injure the person. We don't have to beat them up anymore. And I said, the psychological damage you're doing is probably astronomical. It's unbelievable. I told the fellow, I said, it was a colonel, and I told him, I said, look, I said, I don't know what you think I do. I said, but I got involved in capital punishment because I wanted to cut down on torture. I call it capital torture. And you want me to make a device that deliberately does that? I said, yeah. Don't even talk to me about it. I don't want any part of it. And I didn't make it, and I don't believe it was ever made.
Oh, I guarantee you it was made. There's no doubt about it was made, Fred, with or without your assistance. Once I get a demented idea like this, mark my words, they go through with it. They follow through. It's probably been used 10,000 times without your knowledge.
Well, maybe. I don't know if they made it with the biofeedback. And of course, that's what they wanted, because they want to keep it's a waste when you pass out.
Yeah, with today's new digital technology, I think it would be relatively easy to do. I mean, Mona, don't you find this appalling?
Yeah, I mean, these people are not human beings. That's the way I look at it. They don't qualify as human beings if they enjoy torture. It's a different species. It's not, they're between animals and humans. They're demons. Even animals don't have those instincts.
Well, they're civilized sadists. They're masochists, you know. I mean, it's just unbelievable what we're dealing with here. And it appears that it's a fairly generally known phenomenon that those who tend to be sociopathic tend to rise in political positions so they can have more influence over others, not to do them good, but to inflict harm. If you look at the Biden administration, I think it fits 100%. Hand in glove. These are a group of sadists, masochists, who want to inflict pain on the American people, and they're doing a hell of a job of it. Fred, I didn't mention the fourth reason for punishment, which, of course, is rehabilitation, which does not apply in the case of capital punishment. But you do set an example. You do remove a threat. You do perform a form of retribution, assuming the individual is guilty of the crime. But of course, isn't that a further complication, inflicting capital punishment, when we know perhaps a third of those who are convicted turn out to be innocent?
Right. I don't know what the numbers are there. I have to think that somebody must have slipped through the cracks. Now, we do have a system with enough appeals that most of that stuff should get weeded out. But I don't think we could completely weed it out. I think that probably anybody that anything that results in an execution should be clear cut, and it should be something along the lines of DNA or something that they can definitely prove. But I mean, people have gone to their deaths with evidence that was just circumstantial. You know.
Oh sure.
Depends on the environment, depends upon the time. That gets to be a problem. But I believe that we can eliminate the entire problem by not executing people. But, you know, there's so many people that say, well, it should hurt a little because that's part of the deterrency. Well, I don't think people think about pain. They may think about dying. But they don't necessarily think about pain. And on the other side of the coin, people look and say, well, these are just criminals. What does it matter? You know, I was fortunate in one respect. My father worked at the state prison in Massachusetts. And like a lot of children, I went to work with my father. I've been going to work with him. I had gone since I was 4 years old. I grew up with inmates. I grew up with convicts. I'm not afraid of them. I don't dislike them because they're convicts. They're people just like anybody else that are in a different set of circumstances. Some of them have a different set of values. They don't believe in the same moral code that we do, but they have a code. So they're not that different from us. Good guys. They're the bad guys. But as I say, they're still people. And there's no difference in them and the people that that we meet every day on the street. I remember the inmates, the prisoners, they do a lot of things. And they used to talk to my father and tell my father he was crazy. He worked in the system. He didn't make a lot of money because it wasn't a high-paying job. They said, gee, we go out, we rob a bank, we get a lot of money. And he says, and then they go blow it on prostitutes and liquor and whatever they do. And then they do it again. But my father said to them, yeah, but you get caught and they send you to prison. So the amount of money that you had for that short brief time period amounts to not anywhere near what I earned in the course of the year because you spend the time in prison. He said, and the good thing about it, he said, the difference is that I get to go home 4 o'clock, and you have to go inside at 4 o'clock. these people aren't substantially different than we are. They just have a different moral code. So I don't want to torture anybody.
Let me ask your views about the adage attributed to William Blackstone that it's better that 10 guilty should go unpunished and that one innocent man should suffer. Your thoughts about that? And I swallowed wrong. My apology. I'll be okay. Go ahead.
Well, I also agree with that. it's better that the guilty do go free than executing an innocent man.
I'm sorry to say both seem to happen in our system, which is sometimes described as one of injustice rather than justice. And certainly, we have ample illustration today of those who were protesting at the Capitol being locked up in the District of Columbia jails with no habeas corpus, virtually held in solitary confinement. Which everyone agrees is an inhumane treatment. It'll drive some people literally insane. Whereas the FBI infiltrators and the provocateurs and the Antifa members who dressed as Trump supporters to provoke the whole charade, which is now being drawn out on television endlessly because the Democrats think it's going to help them in the midterm, but because of the overwhelming greater importance of inflation, of price rises, food shortages, and migration, illegal immigration, it ain't going to happen, contrary to their best efforts. And where a Democrat pollster had just reported it's not having the effect because, in the first place, they don't have a counter argument. There's no one there to represent the other side, and therefore it's coming across as a Soviet-style show trial, which is perfectly appropriate. Number two, that Donald Trump is no longer in control. I mean, you know, Trump was president for 4 years, did a lot of good for the country, put us on a firm economic footing, energy independent, clamped down on the borders so that the lowest earning wage earners were seeing their wages rise at the fastest rates. But then number three, because of these other issues I've articulated, so much more pressing and important that the Democrats aren't having the effect. But it's all so theatrical. It's really lacking in any bona fide substance. I find it deplorable. And it's just one more form of what's become of the United States. Fred, I'm afraid your marginalization was symptomatic of what's become massive here in the United States. This is no longer a society that strives to be just, far less accomplishing that goal. Your thoughts?
I agree. I agree. And that's what's happened. The people that are running this country are missing the forest for the trees. Or if they do see the forest, they've got their hand someplace where it shouldn't be, getting something that they shouldn't be getting. So no matter how you slice it, it still results in the same thing. But yes, it doesn't matter. When the federal government decided to execute people again, I sent an email to the President Trump, and I asked him not to do it because I told him that I didn't think that that we could do it right at the time. I didn't get any response. You may not have even got my email, but I would have thought that my name should have at least got it onto his desk.
Yes, yes. Mona, your thoughts about all of the above?
Well, I don't agree with Fred about capital punishment, because I don't care if a couple of mistakes are made. Of course, it's terrible. It's a tragedy. I'm sorry for the person that suffers, but I don't think that it's worth supporting these guys for 50 years with room and board after they commit a hideous crime. That's one thing. I think you have to weigh the value of how much we're going to spend to support these guys as opposed to getting rid of them. So I don't think, as Fred does, that, well, except for the 20% is a big problem. Fred makes the point, and this is very important, that 20 at best, Fred tells me that if he himself were completely in charge of the system, training the expert doctors to the highest level, there would still be a 20% error rate. Therefore, you can only imagine what the error rate is now that it's all in the hands of morons who are sadistic. And these people are sadistic because my girlfriend, even she's from the Bible Belt, and she knows the Bible beliefs, and she honestly believes that after the terrible things they've done to people, the same terrible things should be done to them. Eye for an eye and tooth for a tooth. These people believe in this. Fred doesn't. I don't. I am appalled and revulsed by suffering wherever I see it. I don't want any suffering anywhere. I consider suffering the big enemy of our happiness. And so I would not want to inflict suffering on anyone. My instincts, I'm trying to say, are different from my girlfriend's instincts. In spite of the fact that I abhor suffering, you have to weigh the suffering between how much are we going to pay these guys to keep them alive, as opposed to how much we're going to free up for widows and orphans, use the money for other things other than taking care of these guys. That's my opinion.
Well, I go ahead, Fred.
It actually costs more to execute the person than it does to put him in prison for 20 years. Because the cost in the legal system for the appeals, and then the cost of the execution itself. If we legally get them, we're using probably $2 worth of chemicals. But actually what's happening here is that because of the problems that develop with the execution, the number of police officers that they have to surround the prisons with because they have rioters and people that are causing problems, it actually costs, and I believe the estimate is 2.5 to 3 times what it would cost to house them in the system. Maybe the answer is we put them all on an island and let them fend for themselves on the island. I mean, maybe that'll work because that gets it out from our problem, and we don't have to be responsible for it anymore. But it does cost more.
Well, Mona raises a practical question. You know, I mean, the expense of maintaining someone life imprisonment versus capital punishment, and I think that's a dilemma for society if you want to be humane in your treatment, but there have to be reasonable limits. For example,
it costs more to execute them than it does to put them in prison. The estimate, I believe, is 2.5 times more to execute them than it does to put them in prison, because just the logistics of doing them.
Really, 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 really. That's fascinating, Fred. How much does it cost to keep a prisoner? Minimum, I would think about $100,000, or is it less per year? I mean, if you got a large prison, I don't know, maybe the number's less.
that's probably a fair amount. And the reason why I have that number is because you may know the name Don Cambana, who was a criminologist and a phonologist. He died several years ago. He was a man from Massachusetts who rose and worked in many of the other states. He was a commissioner of correction in Mississippi. He was a deputy warden in Missouri. It was interesting to hear him talk because he did a number of executions. He probably executed 8 or 9 people where he actually had to pull a switch. But the thing is, his feeling was that the death chamber is at the end of a long, and I use this exact word, sewer line. People got nothing. They were in the system. And they just would carry along with the flow, and eventually they were destroyed. And it cost a small fortune to do it. And he believed that we shouldn't have capital punishment. He did his job. He did a number of gas executions. He did alleged, but he believed as I did that we couldn't do it right. He thought we were torturing. His numbers were more.
I just did an internet search reporting the study. It costs a state an average of $45,000 a year to incarcerate a prisoner serving a life sentence without parole, but it will vary somewhat from state to state. South Dakota, probably less than New York, for example. How much does it run to put someone to death, Fred? $1 million? I mean, you know.
Probably pretty close to it when you figure all the appeals and everything that they have to go through. Their lawyers have to go to Washington. This stuff is all paid for by the public. So it comes out of the public pool no matter how you slice it. It costs a small fortune to execute somebody. And on the other side of the coin, there's another argument here, too. Life is considered by most legal systems in the various states to be 20 years. If I had 3 life sentences, I would serve the first one. At the end of 20 years, I would get paroled to the warden, and I would do my next 20 years, and I would be paroled to the warden again, and then I would do my next one. And then at the end of the time, they would maybe parole me if I was still alive and let me out on the street. So life is considered to be 20 years. Now we run into the problem that most of these people are on death row for 20, 18, 19, 21 years. We made them serve a life sentence, and then we execute them anyway. Does that make any sense?
No, that's why it shouldn't take 20 years and it shouldn't cost $1 million. That's got to change. It's like people saying we can't put up a wall to defend our country's borders because it would cost too much money. I could put up a wall for $1 billion. Get a bunch of watchtowers with guns and I'm protecting my country. We can find another way, a cheaper way to execute people.
Well, 2 points. One, Trump virtually had the wall complete, and all these materials for its completion are there, and the Biden administration has just allowed them to lie dormant because they're trying to turn this into the, you know, North American Union, Canada, U.S., Mexico, borderless. They're clearly anti-borders, and they want to change the demographics of the United States. They're not even giving health screening, you know, this pandemic and the shot is supposed to be such a big deal here, but they're all being given a free pass. They're being given taxpayer money to relocate. They're given a red carpet treatment. It's truly outrageous because they're doing tremendous damage to the United States. But the Democrats believe that they're going to vote Democrat. That's really, they think they're bringing in all these potential Democrat voters, and they've been desperate since Trump cleaned their clock. Not only that, but the military has been eviscerated by the vax. Those who had the brains to recognize the threat it represented got the hell out, and those who have continued to refuse are being even court-martialed and separated. So I think they want to bring these immigrants into the military knowing they, unlike American soldiers, would be willing to fire, shoot American citizens. So to them, it's a double or triple whammy. You know, they're getting a great benefit. With your concurrence, I want to open the line to callers, if that would work for you and Mona, Fred. I'm sure there are many who would be eager to speak with you. The number, 540-352-4452. I've killed the break. 540-352-4452. If anyone would like to speak with Fred or Mona. Fred, I just see American society today in a desperate plight, and I have no doubt the Democrats are going to try to find a way to circumvent the midterm elections where they're facing a catastrophe. Every sign has it. They're going to go down massively at the midterm, where I've been predicting for some time losing 100 seats in the House and 3 or 4 in the Senate. Your thoughts?
I think that's true. And they deserve exactly what's going to happen, because they're the ones that caused it. You know, I don't agree with these liberals that are questioning what happened during the last election. I think that Trump was right. I think the election was mismanaged. Too many people voted twice. Some of them voted 3 times. You can't have mail-in ballots. It's bad
right.
enough that we have to have absentee ballots, but those were originally designed for servicemen that were overseas.
Right.
But this mail-in is ridiculous. I voted last election, but I also got a notice that I could mail in a ballot, and there was no way to stop me. And my dead wife also got mail in, so I could have mailed one in for her. I could have mailed one in for me. I could have then gone down and voted. I've had 3 votes. Wow, didn't have something. It's ridiculous.
Oh yeah, And the Dinesh D'Souza 2000 Mules show, they had all these who were stuffing these drop boxes at 2 a.m., 3 a.m., but they had to take selfies, photographs of themselves to be paid off at what I understand was $10 a ballot. And they made a huge difference. Just that method alone was enough to tilt the balance in 5 key swing states. We got 2 callers on the line now. Bruce from Texas. Bruce, join Mona, Fred, and me. Your thoughts, Bruce.
Yes, thank you for having me, and a great guest. I'll just state, right off the bat, just so you know, I was listening to the first half hour, and I had to go. Fred's voice sounds like maybe on speakerphone or something. And so maybe...
Worry not about that, Bruce, where we had technical glitches to begin with. Just go ahead. What do you got?
Okay, this broke this morning, and... So I'm pitching it to you and maybe any other host who's listening to delve into it. Attorney General Merrick Garland is in Ukraine, and he's assigning Special Prosecutor Eli Rosenbaum to investigate Russian war crimes. And as we all know, all these things have been hoaxes. Eli Rosenbaum is the guy who's been sending 90-plus-year-old men from nursing homes to face trial in Germany and Israel. And so these people just don't quit,
This is obviously a stunt. There have been war crimes in Ukraine, but they've been committed by the Ukrainian forces, especially the Azov Battalion. It's rather thoroughly documented. We've been reporting it here regularly. So that's an interesting aside. It's all politics for the Democrats. They don't give a damn about the Constitution or justice or truth. That could be not be further from their mind. So that's a nice point, Bruce, as a latest development. Other thoughts or comments?
Yeah, I'll put it on mute because I'm going to have to go, but I'll stay on the line for now. Let me just finish here. Just think of the hypocrisy of this. You had these Holocaust people, and don't forget Barry Garland was the one behind the Oklahoma City bombing. That's where he got his ticket punched to move up to DOJ, the Attorney General. And so he was in charge of that sketchy operation.
Wow, I mean, that's very bad. Yeah.
Yeah, and you got Azov neo-Nazis there, and they're actually over there working for them now. And if they wanted to find war criminals, just go to the nearest Ukrainian artillery unit there on the border, because they're shelling civilians every day. And if,
yeah,
if you watch RT.com, it's really sad. It almost brings you to tears. These poor people getting shelled mercilessly.
This has been happening since the coup of 2014, which Victoria Nuland financed with $5 billion in taxpayer dollars to get rid of the Russia-friendly president and install a puppet of whom Zelensky is the successor. And this was among the reasons why Putin explained he had to intervene in Ukraine, was a constant artillery bombardment in the Donbass and Luhansk region, where there are Russian speakers who really are very tight with the Russian Federation in order to protect them, but also where we now know there are 40 or 48 biolabs run by the Pentagon in Ukraine. You might ask, why in God's name were they off in Ukraine running biolabs? And that's because they want to keep them secret. This was all cloaked, and they appear to have been doing race-specific research to target the Russian population. It's all outrageous. Bruce, thank you. We have Brian on the line. Brian, you're in Michigan, as I recall.
No, Missouri.
Okay, go
now,
for it.
Anyway, Mark. Yeah, you were talking about Ernst Zundel, and very interesting. His wife, Ingrid Zundel, is a German historian, and they had an article on Veterans Today about she got into the Nuremberg trial transcripts, and she focused on they had a large group of people on the German-French border that were coming across, and these border guards were calling Berlin, and they got Hitler up, and they got the Gauleiter, I think it was Ley for that area, up to say, what the hell's going on? We don't understand why we've got all these people coming in. Well, they ended up, they were the ones behind Kristallnacht. They were the ones breaking up the Jewish shops the next day and destroying everything. And of course they put it on Hitler, and they traced back who they were. And they were a Zionist organization named LICA, L-I-C-A, out of Paris, France. They were the ones that organized that. So, you know, it just shows everything we get. The reason the Jews are so adamant about defending the Holocaust is, it's part of their black magic thing. If they can hide behind something like that, get in the hive mind, the egregore that, oh, we're the poor victims, then they can continue to harm the Palestinians, do the things that they do. And as far as Hitler goes, they take everything bad and try and make it look good. They take everything good and try and make it look bad. You know, I've explained before, Hitler's private chauffeur and bodyguard was Jewish. His name's Emil Maurice, and you can find him on the internet, and he dated Hitler's niece, okay? Now, that doesn't sound like someone who hates Jews. What those camps were full of were Freemasons and the equivalent of the Black Black Lives Matter Antifa types of the day. You know, after Weimar Germany fell and Hitler came to power, he took all those kind of people and he put them in camps. And then he got rid of the Rothschild banker Schlack, put his banker in there, started printing his own money. He's nothing like what they tell you. You know, even William Shire, who wrote Rise and Fall of the Third Reich, admitted that he was a vegetarian. He liked to take his meals with his secretaries. He was always concerned about the little guy, but they don't want to tell you this. They don't want you to know that the father of Nazism, Alfred Rosenberg, is Jewish. He's the one behind the whole Jewish movement, or the Nazi movement. And he wrote a book, myth of the 20th century, which if you read it, you're reading everything going on today. He nails everything. It's just fascinating reading. But they killed two birds with one stone by making him look bad. They got their hollow hoax narrative going because, oh, he killed all these Jews. And then they took a divine being of light and by manipulating things in the background made him look bad. In fact, his secretary, Fra Trundle, at the end of World War II, there were all these people after her to write a book on her time with Hitler. And she said, look, I won't do it. He was being manipulated by outside forces. And if you read Mein Kampf, he's talking about Jewish bankers controlling everything, but they don't want you to know that, so they make him look bad. When you read all that stuff from that period, it's just a repeat of everything going on now. Oh, one other thing. If you look at Hitler's paintings, okay, there used to be a painting that he did of Christ on the cross, and but they still have on the internet, you can see it, a painting of that he did of Christ with his mother, okay? And there's another painting on there today of Christ with Adolf Hitler that hung in the Lutheran churches around Germany. And you can find those. You can look it up. But, you know, it's like the protocols, the elders of Zion say, we're going to hang spectacles on the goyim where they have to look at the world through our lenses. So that's all I have to say about it.
Well, you had quite a lot to say, Brian, I got to add. I think it's becoming more generally understood that the reason they must preserve the Holocaust mythology is that Jewish and Israeli political power is rooted in a Western sense of guilt over the Holocaust. And if it's exposed as a myth, they lose that influence. Amy Goodman even interviewed a former Israeli minister of education, and she explained it was all a trick, that if there's ever any criticism of Israel, in Europe they raise a Holocaust, in America anti-Semitism, but basically conceded it's a fraud on such a massive scale, and you got the ADL clamping down. In fact, they asked Amazon to ban any book that challenged the official Holocaust narrative, which ran between 200 and 2,000 books, including one of mine, and I suppose we didn't go to the moon either, which not only addresses the moon landing hoax, but the death and replacement of Paul McCartney by a fellow I regard as an even better musician, that Osama bin Laden had actually died on 15 December 2001, 10 years before Obama resurrected him and had him die again, that Saddam Hussein was taken out in a B-1 bomber strike on April 1st of 2003, just 3 weeks into the invasion. It may have been the 7th, where even Dick Cheney was quoted in the New York Times, yeah, I think we got him, his lifeless body was dragged out of the rubbish. But where they were going to celebrate on the mission accomplished on the USS Lincoln off the coast of San Diego until someone realized that three presidents, Reagan, Carter, and Ford, had signed executive orders against the assassination of the leader of a foreign nation, so that if W had gone ahead and announced what in fact had happened, he would have acknowledged he was committing a crime. But also then a section of essays on the Holocaust by Robert Forreson and Thomas Dalton and Nick Kohlerstrom, even including my own essay, my introduction, which you can find online under the heading The Holocaust Narrative, Politics, Trump Science. So, Ryan, you make a lot of great points. Let me invite Fred, his thoughts, and Mona as well. Fred.
Again, I have to be in full agreement because that's exactly what they do. When something comes up that they can't deal with, they wave the Holocaust flag, they wave the anti-Semitism flag, and bang, they put everybody else down. People are afraid of the Holocaust. People are afraid of anti-Semitism, and they really don't understand what's going on. They don't understand it's a tool. It never happened, but it's a tool to beat good people down so they can't oppose it. So, yes.
It's a political club, no doubt about it. Mona, your thoughts?
Well, the guy who called in about Hitler's art, that was one of the things that woke me up and enlightened me, because I believed all the stories about Hitler being the devil. But when the internet came, and I was able to look at his art, I could clearly see what the guy called him, a divine being of light. He is. Hitler is a beautiful soul. And all you have to do is look at his artwork and you can see it and you cannot deny it. He has a Disney-esque sense of color and he draws beautiful pictures of architecture. He himself was a designer of buildings, so he'd be the last person to burn down the Reichstag, which they all say. But above all, I just wanted to let people know, if you want to go on the internet and look at his paintings, you'll never be able to think that Hitler was anything other than the sweet, loving, brilliant genius bon vivant that he was.
Well, we're all going to be pilloried for anything we have to say. I'm looking at Hitler paintings here right now, rather fascinating stuff. I see a lot of landscapes, of castles, of buildings. They're pretty intricate. Of course, he was an architect. I mean, and Hitler really did have a design for Germany to recover after World War II, where the Treaty of Versailles had dealt with Germany so harshly. It was really a miracle, economic miracle, when he secured the borders, changed the finances, actually got rid of the bankers who were looting the country. And that's where I think the whole Jewish angle comes in, because the overwhelming majority of them were, in fact, Jews. But he engineered the economic recovery of Germany, and for that, he's never been forgiven. We have another caller here. If I miss my guess, it's don't miss my guess, it's Paul. Are you here, Paul, from California?
Yes, sir. So I guess what's the takeaway here would be to not gas the Jews, because when you not gas the Jews, they're going to lie and say that you gassed them. So you might as well gas the Jews. Would that be a good
today? We presume this is satire, Paul. We don't want any misunderstanding here. Fred, your thoughts?
I wasn't done yet.
We have to take away a stand about the Holocaust. Because of what we know about the use of gas as an execution mode, we cannot execute large quantities of people. The best we can do is two, maybe three. So we're not going to be able to gas the Jews. You know, my suggestion was if Hitler actually was going to get rid of them, the easiest thing would have been to put them in a mine and then blow the entrance of the mine up. They would have dead.
You're saying even the idea of taking these large chambers and packing them in like sardines and then they seeking to gas would not have been effective. I mean, I know
any
of the facilities that would be required to gas a single inmate, but you're talking that this crowd thing wouldn't have worked under any conditions.
No, the distribution would have been ridiculous. Because
Paul, I'm eliciting Fred's remark.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Paul. You got another question or comment?
Well, so yeah, I was going to say another time maybe, or if there's time towards the end of the show, I'd be interested to know the hows and the whys of the 7 to 10 minutes that Fred mentioned before about somebody dying. It doesn't sound like a very pleasant thing. And meanwhile, I want to pick a beef with you, Jim Fetzer. That's my favorite thing to do, is pick a beef with you.
Why not, Paul? Why not?
You continue to say two things that drive me absolutely crazy. You just said one of them, which is the Jewish political power is rooted in guilt over the Holocaust. Okay, words to that effect. I've heard you say that many times. It's ridiculous. Jews do not hold power because there's guilt about the Holocaust, okay? Most people, they don't even think about it. The Jews have been and are an organized criminal syndicate, okay? And they don't, in many cases, because of their control of the money and the media, they may not have to cheat, but they certainly will cheat, okay? And this is well known. So the bottom line is to say that Jewish political power is rooted and guilt over the Holocaust is completely, in my opinion, absurd. The other thing that you continue to say, and I really wish you would stop it, is that the Democrats are importing all these voters, okay, or all these potential voters, or they're allowing all this immigration because they hope to get all these voters. I think this is the most ridiculous thing I've heard. I've mentioned to this years before. Most Americans don't vote anyway. Voter turnout in almost all elections is actually quite small. Secondly, immigrants are far less likely to vote than an average Native American. And third, we all know that nobody votes for the Democrats anyway, right? Because they have to cheat, such as they did, to steal the election from somebody like Trump. Trump is a separate topic. I think we've covered my opinion on him, and it still stands.
Your alternative explanation for the massive migration as a deliberate policy is?
It's a racial war. It couldn't be any more clear. I've mentioned this years ago. It's a racial war. The Jews are behind it. They're funding it. They're the ones that have the power. They can control all these government agencies. They actually fund all these NGOs also. They're facilitating and paying for their transportation here. They're making sure that they're seated in various parts of the country. Right now, they're trying to put Africans in the Dakotas. They already did it in Minnesota. Minnesota used to be over 95% white. Still, they started dropping Somalis in there. They dropped Somalis in Bangor, Maine. They put 10,000 Somalis in Bangor, Maine years ago. Maine was one of the whitest states in the country. They are deliberately targeting us because they know that lots and lots of black and brown people from other countries is a recipe for social disorder and social chaos. These people do not work in the same numbers that Native Americans do. They're dependent on welfare, the same as in Germany. They're doing this to all white countries, Ireland, England, France, you name it. It's a Jewish orchestrated racial war because the Jews are in power and they can do it.
This wouldn't be the first time I've talked about the Kalergi plan to, you know, flood Europe with immigrants from Africa, which has gone on apace. And of course, it's happening here, too. So we can have multiple motives, which you concede, for doing this, which is to obviously it's to change the demographics. I mean, there's no question about that. They want no borders. They want to move toward the one world government. I have no doubt. I think, however, Paul, while I think you're, say, at least half right about the migration issue, I just think you're wrong about this Western sense of guilt. I think for decades after, if you want to say it's diminished now because of our more distant relation to the world history of World War II, I just submit you're just wrong about that. Not that you aren't entitled to fault me, but I don't believe you're correct. Let me invite Fred and Mona, and then I'll come back to you, Paul. Fred and Mona, your thoughts about these issues. Fred.
Yeah, I don't think there's any question that the Jews use the Holocaust. They use immigration. They're promoting white guilt, and they've convinced a lot of people. Obviously, because of what happens in the Bible Belt there in the United States and how these people vote, we know that a good percentage of these people believe that the Jews are the chosen people. And of course, that's not true at all, because I don't want to get into a religious argument here, but the point is, that was the old covenant. The new covenant was something totally different, and it clearly occurred from the time of Christ. But there's absolutely no question that they used the Holocaust, they used these minorities to beat the white people back and beat them down. And, it's something that we have to deal with and we have to fight. Look what they did. Look what they did to Germany after World War II. I mean, they were against Germany in World War I. The Europeans had been fighting for 2,000, 3,000 years, and never once did they depose the ruler of the country. After World War I was over, they deposed the Kaiser. Why? They just shouldn't have done that. I mean, all of the royalty in Europe are related, but they took their cousin and they kicked him out. Then it was worse after World War II, because we've had three or four generations depending upon how many years in a generation, that they've been destroying the German psyche. And they've got 90% of the Germans believing they're nasty and terrible people. For what? I don't know. It's so bad, and you can see in Gamal Rudolph, who is a well-known chemist. Everybody here, I'm sure, knows who he is. He read my report, and he, after reading the report, he decided to do his own examination of the facility that hosted Silicon Isotic, and he agreed with me that there were no gas chambers. But he still has the German guilt. It still sunk into him, and even though he knows there was no Holocaust, he said that the concentration camps were the responsibility of the German people, and because a lot of people died of typhus, therefore the German people are responsible for all these deaths. And, you know, give me a break. The typhus came from the ghetto. Every time they brought the Jews in from one of the ghettos, the typhus epidemic went up. And they fought, and they beat it back, and three times they knocked the typhus epidemic down at Auschwitz. But the bottom line is that it even got to an expert who believes that there was no Holocaust. He still believed that his people were wrong because of all these people died of disease. So
can I quickly address this?
No, Paul, hang on. I'm bringing Fred and Mona back next Wednesday, Paul, and I don't want you to try to get everything in you would like to cram in. Don't do it. We're good. Mona.
Two sentence response.
I'm going to give you two sentences. Mona, your thoughts.
Okay, Paul, I totally agree with that. I mean, I disagree with Paul. I totally agree with Jim. White guilt is the most powerful tool that can be used against this race, our race, the race with the pronounced frontal lobes that has the capacity for guilt. Guilt rules us. That's how the Christians ruled us for thousands of years. Now the Jews have figured out, and you can't blame them for being smart, that if they can be the reason for us to feel guilty, they can control us. And that's what they're doing. Nothing can quail the spirit quicker than guilt. I used to be afraid every time I saw a black person that I was going to hurt their feelings some way or other. And I'd go out of my way, oh, hey, I really like you because you're black. Don't think I don't like. I mean, I wasted so much energy trying to convince black people that I didn't hate them. I freed a lot of energy by just, I don't do that anymore. And now I'm a lot freer person. It's similar with this Holocaust thing. You just fall on your knees in fear.
Nobody cares about it anymore.
Paul, let Mona finish. Go ahead, Mona.
In my own case, all anybody had to do before I finally got stronger is call me a bigot, call me a racist, call me an anti-Semite, and I'm on my knees, I'm on my face, feeling terrible, and I lose everything. I lose the
That's
argument.
That's why women are not designed to be in politics.
Paul.
It's true.
Don't abuse your privilege here, okay? I give you a lot of air time, and I'm wanting
We're
to give you
out of time.
Set. And I said, I'm bringing them back. I'm bringing Mona and Fred back next week, Paul.
Okay. I know, but I don't know if I can call next week or not. Just quickly, I'm not.
I agree with you that women are not as intelligent as men, not in the higher ranges, and that women shouldn't hold positions. I agree with that. And I agree with you possibly that women are more prone to guilt. I'm not disagreeing with that point. I'm just saying it's way more powerful than you realize.
No, okay, Paul, but listen, just. When I just, Jim, the show's almost over. Just let me put this in. I'm not denying they're conducting a psychological operation. I'm not denying that. But it's not the power they have is not rooted in that they have power. Real power rules this world. They have real power. They have real monetary power. They own politicians.
Paul.
They buy and sell politicians. It has
Paul.
Nothing to do with guilt over the
Paul,
Holocaust.
Thank you, Paul, as always. But Fred and Mona, I'm so grateful to have you here. I'm bringing you back next Wednesday. I look forward to a further conversation. Thank you both. It was wonderful having you here today.
We'll be right back. Revolution Radio.
Enter into a world unseen on Raven Star's Witching Hour. You will encounter eclectic topics from the realm of spirit brought into our matrix of truth. With your host, the Solaris Blue Raven, Solaris will bring you an array of unique guests covering topics from ghostly spirits to amazing anomalies, covert technology, UFOs, and shadowy global events.
And that's right here at Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, Saturdays, midnight till 2 a.m. Eastern Time. Revolution Radio, where information never sleeps.
Let the magic rise.
This is Thomas, a.k.a. a Mad Painter. I'd like you to join me Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time for Open Canvas. Don't forget to bring an open mind.
Yes, folks, that's right. Bring an open mind to an open canvas. Again, that is Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern. UFOs to government corruption. This is Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. You don't need to expect us. We're already here.
We did not engage in conflict that was out of line with our mission.
Is it disloyal? Is it sedition? Is it treason to oppose the hands of tyranny? Never!
I will never send troops anywhere on a mission of that kind without telling them that if somebody shoots at them, they can darn well shoot back.
I know not what course others may take, but as for me, give me liberty! Oh, give me!
A dark cloud is finally lifting across the world as U.S. military intelligence